You're listening to Health Matters with Karen Key, getting you one step closer to a clean bill of health.
And a very good evening to you, and welcome to this week's edition of Health Matters. On the show this evening, I'll be talking with Dennis Hobson, CEO of Cape Mohair, about the uses for mohair socks. Veterinary surgeon Megan Kelly of Holistic Vet will be on the line, and we'll be chatting about a new online pet health academy. Earlier today, in preparation for World Cancer Day on Sunday, there was a debate about access to life-saving medicines and the demand for policy reform. And to tell us more about that, I'll be joined this evening by Linda Grief. She's the chairperson of the Cancer Alliance. Ophthalmologist Dr. Lawrence Kutsia, founding member of Envision Centre for Sight, will be on the line, and he'll be telling us what we need to know about lens implants. And gosh, when I was reading all the background information, I was absolutely amazed at what they're able to do these days. Well, that's the lineup for this evening. I do hope you'll stay with me and enjoy the show here on SAFM.
You're listening to Health Matters with Karen Key, getting you one step closer to a clean bill of health.
Well, because of a passion to educate and empower pet owners with knowledge, veterinary surgeon Dr. Megan Kelly started the online Pet Health Academy. Well, she's on the line now to tell us more. Megan, good evening. Welcome to the show. Oh, Linda, sorry. We're having a problem getting our guests this evening, so hopefully we'll get them all on the line a little bit later. But let me tell you that in preparation for World Cancer Day 2018, which takes place on Sunday, the 4th of February, a debate was held earlier today on the access to life-saving medicines and the demand for policy reform. And correctly, I'll tell you now who the guest is on the line. It's Linda Grief, and she's chairperson of the Cancer Alliance. Linda, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, and thank you for having me. I'm just glad I'm not speaking about pets, because I would be really making a mess.
Well, you know, it's the health program, and I always think pets are always part of the family. So when I can include them at any point, I certainly try to do that. But you had this big meeting today.
Yes, I was quite excited and apprehensive about it, but we're really happy with the outcome. So we had a video conferencing between Cape Town and Johannesburg with some really the Director General of Health, Minister Masotu, and speaking with us, and some international patent law lawyers and advocates and the cancer patient. And we really just unpacked the whole issue of the impact that the patent laws in South Africa have on making cancer drugs really, really expensive and unaffordable. And if we think about the World Cancer Day themes for this year, it's about shaping our policy, improving access to treatment, investing in cancer control, and where you live should not determine what kind of treatment you get, and also make your voice heard. So we really want to align ourselves with that call to action and ask cancer survivors across South Africa to really look out for our hashtags, Cancer Alliance, you know, everywhere, and really join in the conversation, because we need to have the support of cancer survivors to really pull the resources together to get government to hear our voice. And the issue with patent law is when a drug gets developed, the pharmaceutical companies try and make up the deficit in terms of what they've spent in research and development by setting the price so high that ordinary cancer patients can't actually access new innovative drugs that have been developed. And then that patent lasts for 20 years, which they can then recoup their cost that they invested into research and development. But in the meantime, it remains inaccessible to cancer patients, and especially cancer patients who are dependent on the state sector for treatment.
But even in the private sector, the medical aids have got to the point now where you've got to take out all this added insurance just to try and cover it, because even in the private sector, you can't afford it.
Exactly. And if you think about a drug like Herceptin, which is one of the big drugs that's been in the news recently, you know, that could cost anything about R500,000, while there's a generic available that can cost you R4,000 a month. You know, so that's really important that we fight for pharma companies not to evergreen the patents, because they add one little thing and then they take another 20 years and add it to that, you know, to that patent law, which is really a manipulation of the market. So we're happy for them to get back their research and development money, but also to be transparent about how they do that, because there's no ways that a drug can be, the research and development can be so expensive that a drug must cost you 75,000 rand a month. No way.
Well, after having heard a friend of mine who had breast cancer, what she ended up having to fork out over and above what her medical aid paid because they put her on Herceptin. And because I have breast cancer in my family, I've actually taken out a top-up policy just in case.
Because
I thought,
sure,
I will have to sell my house and my soul if, heaven forbid, that ever happens to me.
And I promise you, people are... I heard today a story of a young woman that went had to also have breast cancer treatment, and she had to take her son out of university for a year so that she could afford her Herceptin. You know, it's devastating.
It's not right.
And Herceptin actually, you know, it prolongs life. It saves lives of young women with breast cancer if they're HER2 positive. It's a life-saving drug that's made, you know, really big technological advances and brought a lot of hope to the cancer environment. But it's not manageable, you know, and that's why we as cancer advocates need to stand up and speak up and keep pushing and keep pharma companies accountable.
But the scary part is, though, Linda, is the fact that cancer rates in South Africa are expected to rise by 85%
exactly.
by 2030.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just down, 2030 is just down the road.
Yeah.
85%, I mean, how many people are going to be needing medication?
More and more people.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
And I think, you know, what is the saddest thing is that with the new developments in cancer drugs, people are living longer and are surviving cancer treatment, but then they've been ruined financially and they can't actually benefit from the time that they've got extra to live. So, you know, the key message still remains, cancer has to be diagnosed early to be able to have optimal treatment and to have a very good chance of survival 10 years plus. You know, remembering that cancer is 300 different illnesses and you can't compare breast cancer to colon cancer to prostate cancer. So it's a very individual approach that we have to follow. And in all the 30 years that I've been working in oncology, now you know how old I am, I've not seen anybody cured from alternative and complementary therapies. And my philosophy is, you know, the research and development that's done into cancer drugs over the world is really phenomenal, and that is what's saving lives. But it has to become at a better price, and that is more cost-effective and transparent in terms of pricing practices across the world. And the UN is also calling for that. You know, universal access to care is the big buzzword at the moment. And we're not going to get universal access to care if prices don't come down.
The thing is that a lot of these life-saving medications are available in other countries at less than half the price
exactly.
that we're paying for
the
here.
The generics, yeah. And that's the thing, that, you know, companies are, they can't start making generics before the 20-year patent is over, and then they keep on adding those little tails to the recipe that extends that patent. Nearly one drug was extended until 30 years. You know, that's not ethically doable, and we really need to address that kind of practice.
Now, the Cancer Alliance, well, I'll get to that in a moment. I want just for people who aren't aware of who you are,
yeah.
but you announced at this meeting, I was told, that 8 medicines that you're going to be focusing
that's
on
right.
over a 2-year campaign. Obviously, these are the really life-saving medications, and you're going to be focusing on getting these out of this patent roundabout thing.
And we will be lobbying very aggressively, and that's where we need the support of the public. You know, there's a drug for breast cancer, prostate cancer, multiple myeloma, small cell lung cancer, lymphomas, leukemias, and melanomas. And really, really, these are, you know, cancers that are very important in South Africa. We have a lot of blood cancers. Breast cancer, prostate cancer is one of the big cancers that kill women and men in South Africa. And therefore, you know, we've gone through a very intensive patent law analysis to come to these 8 drugs, and we've consulted with clinicians in private and public sector environments to identify the drugs that will be adding the most value to the South African cancer community. And that's how we came to the choice of the drugs that we have chosen.
Now, just for people who aren't aware of the Cancer Alliance, you're a group of cancer associations altogether.
Yeah, well, we're a group of cancer NGOs, 22 cancer NGOs that have come together to work together on advocacy issues. So each cancer, each NGO goes on with their own services. But when it comes to advocacy and lobbying for improved service delivery and access to care, we all stand together with one voice. And I think that makes us so strong. So So a lot of the big organizations like the Cancer Association of South Africa, CHOC, you know, or the Childhood Cancer Association, Breast Health Foundation, Reach for Recovery, those, you know, very well-known cancer NGOs in South Africa are part of the Cancer Alliance. And we hope that more cancer NGOs will join us, you know, because we don't interfere with their day-to-day work, but we ask them to add their voice to ours when we speak about advocacy and making access to care for cancer patients more equitable across the country.
Now, if people, you mentioned that you need the support of the public here, Linda.
Yeah.
They should just go to the website, canceralliance.co.za.
Yeah, I think that would be the best, and to leave us a message there. Also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. I think in the press release there are some handles that you can mention. I haven't got it in front of me now. I'm not very technologically minded.
You and me both.
my colleague will be very angry at me that I didn't do that properly. Well, but in any case, really, join us, join the conversation, get involved. And, you know, we really need a Cape Town stadium full of cancer survivors to move forward. And like in the HIV era, you know, those HIV patients stood together, and that's how they got cheaper ARVs available, because they lobbied and they made their voices heard, and that's exactly what the cancer community in South Africa must do. We need to speak up and make our voices heard and really ask for the shape up of policy and improve access to care for everybody in South Africa.
Well, we're all very good at sitting around complaining, but now we have an opportunity to do something.
Exactly.
So I'll give you the website again. I'm sure all the contact details are on there,
absolutely.
But we need your voices. We need to know we need to hear from you.
And so, watch the space, because we're going to be publishing the data around the different drugs and, you know, prices and very interesting information. And we will be actively engaging with the public to become part of that whole process.
That's fantastic. We need more people like you out there, Linda. Thank you very much
indeed
for joining us.
And thank you to your radio station for committing to serving the community in such a special way.
Only a pleasure. And hopefully we can chat again soon once you've put out some more information. Thanks for your time this evening.
Okay.
Thanks.
Have a good evening.
You too. Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Linda Gruyff is chairperson of the Cancer Alliance. And for more information, take a look at the website. I'm sure all the Twitter and Facebook things will all be on there, so you can find them almost everywhere. The website is www.canceralliance.co.za.
Drugs like Nyaope, crystal meth, cat and alcohol are destroying our communities. It's time to claim back our streets and save lives before they are needlessly lost. Join Kabelo Mabalani on Kick It, a brand new heart-hitting TV series that will show you what it's like on the streets and in the minds of drug users desperate to live normal lives again. This emotional, gut-wrenching journey happens every Friday night at 8:30, only on SABC 2. Don't miss it. Brought to you by the Soul City Institute in partnership with SABC Education. SABC Education, enriching minds, enriching lives.
In my community, there is a lot of litter. And when I grow up, I'm going to build the litter tractor. It works underground to suck in litter and put it in the rubbish bin.
Surprise, and many kids like him want to change the world. Make sure they can by helping Africa Tycoon support them in every aspect of their lives, from cradle to career. Visit www.africatycoon.org. This is an SABC Foundation-supported initiative.
You're listening to Health Matters with Karen Key, getting you one step closer to a clean bill of health.
Because of a passion to educate and empower pet owners with knowledge, veterinary surgeon Dr. Megan Kelly started the online Pet Health Academy. She joins me now to tell us more. Megan, good evening. Welcome back to the show. It's been ages since we last spoke. Megan, we're going to have to call you back. This line is really bad. You're breaking up all over the place and we can't hear you properly. So if you would mind just hanging up, we'll call you straight back. Now, I think hopefully we can get Megan on a better line, because that line is really awful. I really would like to talk about how we can keep our pets healthy. And I always talk about this. Well, this is the health program, as you all know. And I'm a pet fanatic. So I always believe that our pets are not just animals. I always believe they're part of the family. So if we worry about our health, we should be concerned about the health of our pets as well, keeping them very healthy. And Megan, we had her on the show before. She's a holistic vet, and she does all sorts of wonderful things with massage and all sorts of treatment things. And she started this online pet health academy where she's imparting her knowledge with us, and we can go on there. And some of the courses are free, some of them do cost. If you'd like to go further on the course, there are prices involved, but you can have a look at all of that. I'll give you the website at the end of our chat. And we'll be talking all about how we can keep our dogs and our cats and all our animals as healthy as we possibly can, so they live a pain-free and long life with us. Megan, are you back with us? Yes, hopefully it's going to last. It's sort of going in and out, but let's hope we can keep you on the line. I mentioned that you've started this online pet health academy. Where did the idea come from? Oh, Megan, no. Sorry, this line is really, really bad. We're going to have to try. I don't know. I'm not sure if you have another number we can try, or whether maybe you could just move around a little bit. No, we can't hear you at all. Okay, we're going to try and get another number for you. If you could maybe just hang this one up, we'll try and get back to you. Oh, hang on there. You came back there for a moment. Are you still with me? Oh, no, she's gone now. Came back for all of about 10 seconds and then disappeared. And that was the only time that I could actually hear her properly, was in the 10 seconds when we were actually disconnecting her. But we've got some interesting guests still coming up. We're going to be talking about lens implants, intraocular lens implants. Quite amazing what they can do, actually. There's some incredible new developments in the field. And it's almost, you know, if you have a cataract before, in the old days, it was almost the end of the world. But while we're trying to get Megan back on the line, our next guest is up with us, so we're going to go on to that one. And Cape Mohair manufactures a niche product called the MediSock, using a specialized combination of mohair from Angora goats and bamboo. The unique qualities of this product make it ideally suited to people with diabetes, circulatory problems, and Raynaud's syndrome. To tell us more, I'm joined now by Dennis Hobson, CEO of Cape Mohair. Dennis, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Hi, evening.
So mohair socks, mohair and bamboo. I know you, excuse me, you guys make a range of all sorts of amazing socks, but this is a very special one called the MediSock.
Yes. It was initially designed for diabetics. With a problem of diabetic sweating and having bacterial problems and eventually losing their toes. That was the initial purpose of the sock. And obviously from there we've learned that it is suitable for various circulation problems, etc.
I know somebody that actually has Raynaud's syndrome, and I know it's a terrible thing, because no matter what you do, your toes and your fingers are turning blue, and they never get warm, and it's painful. And so something like this, if they wore this, I'm sure would help a lot as well, because that is one of the things you mentioned here, that it is good for circulatory problems.
Yes, we've had people coming in the retail level and saying that they had Raynaud's disease, or their mother had it, and we've suggested that they wear the sock, because what it does, it keeps the feet warm. Unfortunately, we don't have gloves, but in terms of toes and the Raynaud's disease, the circulation at the end points, like the toes. And what it does, even when they get wet, it still keeps that warm, which allows the circulation to take place. Whereas, as far as we're aware, we don't know of any other product that can do that.
Well, your next market now, Dennis, is going to have to be gloves. You're going to have to move into gloves next. I mean, if you can make socks, why can't you make gloves?
We can make gloves. We can use the same machines, and we're going to put a few attachments onto it, and maybe that is one of our next moves. Because I see this market as being, it's never ending.
Now, you didn't start out doing the MediSocks. I mean, you guys were just making socks. And then we came up with a MediSock, and suddenly, literally, it just exploded.
Well, we started out making mohair socks probably for the totally the wrong reason. We saw value in mohair, but it's a very expensive fiber. And over the years, we developed hiking socks, sports socks, etc. And it's a very good value sock. But once we discovered the MediSock, our life changed. Because, as I say, it's a never-ending market. And somehow these fibers support the genuine attributes of dryness, warmness, circulation, and that's what the diabetics were looking for. And now, obviously, Raynaud's disease, it's an add-on, and gloves is the next step we've got to look at.
Now, I mentioned that they're made from mohair and bamboo. Now, people are sitting there thinking, bamboo, that's quite hard. What do you do to the bamboo? Obviously, it's not the actual, what we would imagine, the raw bamboo in the sock.
Yeah, the bamboo is made from the pulp inside the bamboo. Whereas the bamboo that we see is very hard. They use it for scaffolding, you know, in the East, and they use it for flooring. But that's the outside of the bamboo. The bamboo is used to make the yarn is actually the pulp on the inside of the bamboo.
Okay, so they sound very comfortable.
Bamboo is incredibly soft. It's very absorbent. It fits very well with mohair because mohair is very absorbent. Mohair is not quite as soft, but mohair's got other attributes like it dries quickly. Bamboo doesn't dry as quickly, so the two balance each other out. Bamboo doesn't last as long as mohair. Mohair is long-lasting. So by combining the two, we actually get the best of both.
And the thing about the mohair as well, I mean, it's antibacterial, as you mentioned, and it also resists the odor, and it sort of gets the moisture off, you know, it resists the moisture. Your feet tend to sweat very much in the socks. So it's got a lot of real bonuses added into the mohair.
Yes, and the beauty about the mohair, South Africa is the biggest producer of mohair in the world.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
And so from a sourcing point of view, and that was one of the reasons why we went into mohair, because it was a local product, but we went in for very different reasons for what we're doing now. So sourcing-wise, we had a massive advantage to anyone in the world. With bamboo, yes, we have to import that, but it's an add-on to the mohair. The mohair makes the thing work.
Now, you started out as quite a small company here in South Africa. Are you exporting now? I mean, I know that you've grown substantially and you've created jobs and, you know, because it works. I think you get the mohair from the Eastern Cape, is it? And it's produced here. Then the product is made in the Western Cape. So you've got job creation in two provinces. Am I correct on that one?
Yes. All the mohair is washed, scoured, and spun into yarn, dyed in the Eastern Cape. And then it comes down here. So while we've doubled our employment, the fact that we're creating demand for mohair plants in the Eastern Cape, they've obviously had an increased requirement for labour. The other thing about the mohair and being so close, it's promoted a lot of interest for the producers. They're feeling confident that there's actually a takeoff for them now. At one stage, they were very depressed. Prices were depressed because they couldn't see something happening. Now they can see it happening.
Is this something you're exporting, this product, Dennis?
Yeah, we've actually got a distribution warehouse south of London. And over the last 12 months, we've paid a lot of attention in promoting our export market. Before we couldn't afford to do it because our capacity wasn't big enough. And since our association with Anuva and the capital investment they've put into the company, we can now afford to go full steam ahead to export it. We've just recently taken an order from India, which surprises us. And that is the biggest diabetic population in the world.
Really? Oh, because I was reading something. I mean, the World Health Organization said the number of people with diabetes has risen from 108 million in 1980 to 422 million in 2014, and all those people are going to be needing socks.
Yeah, it's quite frightening.
It's very frightening. And I'm sure, I mean, this is something that isn't, I haven't heard of another product that has the same effect, effectively, that these socks would have.
Yeah, you'll find diabetic, so-called diabetic products on the market. Most of them are made out of synthetic, but it's a known fact. Synthetic is the least absorbent product there is. Marianne bamboo is the most absorbent, and it is critical to be effective that you've got this absorbency factor to keep the foot dry. And, yeah, as I say, it's quite frightening. At the moment, we're sitting with a situation that our lines are full. We're going to have to do something about it very shortly.
And the one last thing, I know it's all very well exporting these things, Dennis, but where can we get hold of them in South Africa if people are looking to get hold of these? Are they easily available?
Dis-Chem have one of our customers at the moment. We've just done a autumn promotion with Clicks, which will be on the shelves from the 1st of April. It's going to be a massive promotion, so they should be available in, I won't say all the Clicks stores, but will be in most of them. And Dis-Chem, I'm sure, will continue expanding on their market.
Is this a case of one size fits all, or are there different sizes of this thing? Or
we've got one which is very stretchy. It's we sell it as a 4-12, and then there are two others that we sell as a ladies and a men's, which are thinner. The thicker one, it's so stretchy that it fits everyone. But the thinner ones are ladies and men's.
Okay, so there's pretty much something that's going to fit everybody.
Yeah, pretty much so.
That's, and they're easily to find. I mean, Clicks, as you said, is pretty much everywhere.
Well,
Clicks, and Dis-Chem.
They're launching at the beginning of April. They've got a big autumn launch, which is very exciting. And Dis-Chem have carried it in most of their stores, you know, for a couple of years now. But we're very excited about the Clicks launch.
Gosh, well, Dennis, I think it's a marvelous product, and I know a few people that when I mentioned it to them were sort of dashing out wanting to try and find them, because one I know, as I mentioned, has Raynaud's, and the other one has diabetes. So, you know, they were both very interested in these socks. So
you'll find them with some independent stores, odd pharmacies, and you can get it on our website. We sell them online, which is under the Murray Mall Shop.
Is that on capemohair.co.za? Would they find it there?
No. For the retail, it'll be www.murraymallshop.
M-I-L-L. Mohair Mall Shop.
Yeah.
.co.za?
Yeah.
Okay.
Under Cape Murray, that's not a retail site, but the Murray Mall Shop is a retail site.
Okay, the other one, they can just find out more information if they want to on that other one.
Correct.
Great. Well, Dennis, thank you very much for joining us on the show. It sounds fascinating. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
No, fantastic. I hope we can make everyone healthy.
I hope so. Thank you, Dennis. Good night.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dennis Hobson is CEO of Cape Mohair. Now, for more information about Mohair and the products they do, it's capemohair.co.za, but they have an online shop, which is www.mohairmullshop.co.za. And always remember, if you miss any of these details, just drop me a mail to healthmatters@safm.co.za.
Every Wednesday is Women in Sport Day on SABC Sport. As we salute and celebrate the journey of South African women in sport from all walks of life. The Ladies Club, a sport and lifestyle talk show presented by Lebo Motsoedi and Valen Kirtley, as they get up close and personal with the Game Changer. Tune in this Wednesday at 11 a.m. on SABC2.
SABC Sport, for the love of the game.
You're listening to Health Matters with Karen Key, getting you one step closer to a clean bill of health.
I've been trying to speak with Dr. Megan Kelly. We've been having problems with the phone lines. I'm hoping that she's with me now. Megan, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Oh,
Karen?
That is so much better. I feel so much better. I can hear you. I mentioned when I first tried to speak to you that you've got a passion to educate and empower pet owners with knowledge, and you started the online Pet Health Academy. And I was asking you what prompted this idea. Where did you come up with the idea of trying to get people basically to do it for themselves?
Yeah, I really just wanted to empower pet owners with knowledge so that they were able to help their pets, so that their pets can live long, happy, and healthy lives, really. You know, pets are so reliant on their owners to make decisions in their life, whether it's what they eat, how they exercise, how they're stimulated. And ultimately, the owner actually determines how healthy they are. The pet really has no choice in the matter. And so my goal is to guide pet owners so they can basically be the heroes in their pets' lives, and to give these pet owners the information that they need to make the right choices to ensure their pets are healthy, happy, and live for a long time.
Now, you actually have a veterinary rehabilitation clinic, so you've worked with dogs and for many years now, rehabilitating them. I think arthritis, and as they get older, their mobility becomes an issue. And you've put all of that on this online academy website. You can go and, as I mentioned also, I don't know whether you were still on the line at the time, I said you can start off with one of the free courses, and then you can see if you'd like to continue. There is a charge involved, but it's a lot of information. So let's just maybe go through what you're offering online.
Yeah, so, I mean, as you mentioned, I have a rehabilitation clinic, which I'm not working in at the moment. I'm really trying to focus on this online platform. But one of the things, you know, treating all these patients with arthritis, I see so many patients coming in, and they're all suffering from arthritis. And from my early vet days, seeing arthritic patients, I really was searching for ways to prevent arthritis, and I realized after sort of doing some postgrad studies that my approach in the beginning, once when I qualified, had not really been complete. And I wanted, I knew that these pets, I needed to try and reach them when they were puppies, because a lot of decisions that pet owners actually make in the early days when they're puppies and kittens, and decisions that they make can increase the incidence of like, developmental conditions such as head dysplasia or cruciate ruptures. And these kind of conditions will ultimately lead to osteoarthritis. And so sort of in my journey, I started sort of creating online courses. And the first online course I created was the 12-week strengthening program, which is basically a 12-week exercise program for pets that have arthritis. So that's one of the courses that are available on the website. But the website sort of now has progressed into a lot more than just the arthritis, because I realized that not only arthritis, there are many diseases and illnesses that can be prevented. And, you know, and before I created this platform, I didn't think it was really possible to reach all the pet owners that I needed to. But now, I mean, I'm guiding and supporting pet owners from all over the world. And I really feel like I'm achieving the purpose that I set out to in the beginning when I enrolled into vet school. So we're looking at so many different topics. The different ways in which we educate would be webinars. For those of you who don't know what a webinar is, it's basically an online lecture where you log in and you can see at the screen, you can see a picture of the lecturer, and sometimes you can see a presentation. And the attendee is actually able to ask questions, a little area to chat. So we do live webinars. We have recorded webinars where people can access at any time. And then I've got a whole lot of online courses, and these are mainly at the moment focused on joint health, but we'll be adding in loads more about treating cancer naturally, for example. We're going to be doing ones on nutrition, lots of different online courses, weight management courses. And then the last type of way in which we teach is through ebooks. So these are like downloadable booklets on all different topics.
The interesting thing when I was looking through all the information on the courses, Megan, you know, when you talk about treating animals, you think, oh, when they're older and this arthritis, as we mentioned at the beginning. But I looked on one of the first courses you do, you're building your pet's core muscles. And I'm assuming you'd start that from when, you know, you do puppy training, from almost when you get the dog or the cat.
Definitely. You know, I think it doesn't matter. It's never too late, and it doesn't matter. Obviously, ideally, when they're puppies and kittens, if you start doing strengthening exercises and start doing exercises that are targeted to the muscles that help support joints, you're going to decrease the chance of your pet becoming arthritic. And there are many choices that we can make when they're puppies and kittens, and that will influence whether it be nutrition choices that we make, the way we exercise, the way in which we stimulate them. But it's not too late. You can do it if they're middle age. You can even do it if they're an old age senior dog. You can make healthy changes to their lives, and even extend their life, and make them healthier and happier and live for longer.
The one thing that will make you really popular with your pets is if you did the massage course.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that are on there. And then we've also got another course called the 7-Minute Doggy Workout, which is basically 7 easy exercises. Also an acupressure ebook, so acupressure for pet owners. You know, pet owners can't do acupuncture, so this is a way in which they can help with pain management in their pets. So there's lots and lots of different things that we want to share and educate pet owners with.
This is a relatively new thing that you've done, and you've only put it up relatively recently. How is it going so far?
It's going really well. We've got people from in Europe already, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. We've got a webinar tomorrow. I think we have, when I last looked, we had 260 people that were registered for tomorrow night's webinar. Tomorrow night, for those pet owners that are listening, if they're interested, it's on pet first aid, and it's sponsored by a company called MediPet that does pet health insurance, which we're really grateful for. So there's lots of different topics that we're going to be covering. And we're going to be looking at behavior. Towards the end of February, we've got one on barking, why dogs continually bark. We're looking at canine enrichment. This is quite a new and interesting field, how to stimulate your pets. And I recently did a little video on how to make something called a snuffle mat. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No.
Snuffle mat. It's basically a mat with little bits of fleece all tied into strips. And then you hide treats inside, and then the dog has to go and look for them. And it just helps with stimulation and helps prevent boredom. And especially in dogs as they're getting older, there's a thing called cognitive decline. And we have pets that sort of suffer from dementia and senility, and doing these type of stimulatory exercises with them really, really helps to prevent that decline. So those are some of the sort of behavior things that we're going to be covering. We're going to be looking at nutrition, chatting about all different types of pet foods, whether it's raw food, pelleted food, the different contents in food, and then also concentrating on, you know, my inclination is always towards natural pet health care. So a lot of the focus will be on natural ways to treat pets, sort of minimizing any invasive techniques, so conservative ways of treating different conditions, and also preventing illness, really. That's really what we want to do. We want to keep our pets healthy, so prevent them from getting illnesses and things that pet owners should be doing, which maybe they're not.
You know, looking back sort of 10 or 20 years, none of this would, people wouldn't even have imagined you could have done all of this for an animal. And I never like to refer to them as pets. I always refer to them as part of the family. But, you know, it's I always say, if you're doing it for yourself, you know, why aren't you doing it for your animals? Because they are part of the family. But back in the day, this, we would never even have thought that this was possible, Megan.
No, you know, I think our focus, you know, even when I was at Vetscom and I qualified in 2001, and I can't recall ever being taught anything about preventing.
No, it was always treating.
Health. It was always treating, yeah, and that's, really, I think, you know, I think we're a little bit behind, behind sort of human medicine. And human medicine is moving that way, and it's moving that way a lot quicker. I think in the pet health industry, we're only sort of slowly starting to move that way. But as people are looking for ways in which to extend their lives and to treat diseases that they have or illnesses that they have naturally, they're looking for similar things for their pets. And there's a lot of information online, but it's all very different information. So a lot of conflicting information. And that's really where I would like to come in. I'd like to guide pet owners, you know, so that they have the correct information and that they can make the correct choices for their pets.
Now, if people are wanting to find you, Megan, I know you have a website, drmegankelly.com. Is there a separate website for the online academy?
No, so the online Pet Health Academy and drmegankelly.com, it just goes to the same website.
Okay.
So they can find out all the information there. If they want to sign up for some webinars, I've got a webinar on Saturday, which is on natural ways to manage arthritis, and I'm doing that together with a Canadian vet. So that's going to be online. That's a free webinar. I think there are a few spaces left. But they can, people can sign up on the website. There's a free sign up where you can just get notifications of any free content and free webinars. And then if you want sort of more of the online courses and you want access to all the recordings of all the webinars, so the webinar library, basically, then there is a paid version. But there's lots of information on there. And I do also have a blog, which I'm slowly starting to post on with lots of information about all different types of pet health care.
Well, Megan, thank you so much for doing that for our beloved members of the family that, as I said, in years gone by, there weren't these choices, and now they are. So thank you so much for telling us all about that, and good luck with the Academy.
Thanks, Karen. And I just want to just to invite pet owners just to take this journey with me. And I hope to see you all online on all the education and webinars that we'll be providing. And thank you, Karen. It's always wonderful chatting to you, and just thanks for the opportunity.
Only a pleasure. We'll keep in touch and let me know how it's going.
I will do. Thanks
Megan. Thanks. Good night to you.
Bye bye.
Veterinary surgeon Dr. Megan Kelly. And for more information, you can take a look at the website. It's www.drmegankelly.com. And the doctor is just the DR, drmegankelly.com.
15 February is International Childhood Cancer Day, and the CHOC Childhood Cancer Foundation is asking schools, corporates and individuals to wear blue in support of children with cancer. Blue pants, shirts, suits, blue dresses, blue hearts, anything blue, along with a trendy Have a Heart for Children with Cancer badge or heart pin. It will all help in the effort to spread the message. One can also get a loved one a delicious chocolate. Buy yours today. Visit www.choc.org.za or nearest CHOC regional office. This is an SABC Foundation supported initiative.
You're listening to Health Matters with Karen Key, getting you one step closer to a clean bill of health.
Before intraocular lenses or IOLs were developed, people had to wear very thick glasses or special contact lenses in order to see after cataract surgery. There are now several types of IOL implants available to help you enjoy improved vision with reduced dependency on glasses post-surgery. Dr. Lawrence Kutsia is an ophthalmologist and a founding member of Envision Center for Sight. Lawrence, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, and good evening to our listeners.
Now, these IOLs, these implants, I mean, when I was reading about what has been developed in the more recent developments of these things, it's quite fascinating what you can do now.
Yes, definitely. Over the years, really, technology and advances in intraocular lenses have really went leaps and strides, and we can actually give someone quite clear vision at multiple distances, and as I've said over the past few years, there's really been significant advances, especially in the field of toric intraocular lenses as well as multifocal intraocular lenses.
Now, you have cataract surgery. What used to happen in the past? You just never got anything.
Yes, so let's go back a few years to the 1980s. Around about there, the cataracts were removed, and actually, I think we must first look at or tell people what a cataract is. It is actually your own eye's your own eye's lens, which becomes cloudy, and then you actually start seeing poorly, having blurry vision, having symptoms like difficulty reading at night with your glasses, glare and halos when cars approach you at night, and what happens then actually is that because you lose vision, your daily function deteriorates, and so in the 1980s, what actually would happen is they will remove your lens through surgery, but they won't be able to replace the lens, and then you'll have to wear the thick glasses, as you rightly said. But moving up to the late 1980s, early 90s, then we actually could put intraocular lens in the eye. Initially, there was large wounds made, but as we progressed with our technology, we start using an ultrasound or phaco emulsification. Our wounds got smaller, and up to now, where we can actually introduce a lens through a 2.4 millimeter wound. And so these days, it is a cataract surgery has become quite a common procedure that is performed between 10 and 20 minutes, and it's very safe, low risk, and you can really benefit patients and really make a difference in patients' lives.
So basically, just to make it very simple, this intraocular lens is an artificial lens that's implanted in the eye once the cataract has been removed. So you, in some cases, might not have to wear glasses, but in some cases you would have to wear glasses even though you had this artificial lens, because there are different types of lenses and there are different types of results from those different types depending on what you need it for.
Yes. So let's say most people, when they go for cataract surgery, they will need to wear glasses. Because most of our lens that we use is monofocal lenses, meaning that it only focuses on a single point. If your surgeon or your ophthalmologist will discuss it with you to decide which focal point is best suited for you, and then you will use spectacles for the other focal points. Let's say you would like to. To see far without spectacles, then you'll need spectacles to read. But it also depends on on the type of eye you have, because if you have astigmatism, that is where the front part or the cornea of the eye is shaped like a rugby ball instead of a soccer ball, your focus point will not be on a single point at the back of the eye, which we call the retina or the macula. It will basically form a line, and then you will still need to wear spectacles for far and for near, so that focus point is on a single point instead of a line. But there are actually intraocular lenses which is shaped like the racquetball, but it's opposite to what your eye's cornea is shaped to, and then it's like a plus and a minus that actually cancel one another out, and then you also only need glasses for one point, either far or near.
You also have multifocal IOLs though. It's like wearing multifocal glasses. Would it be the same sort of effect?
No. Not. Multifocal glasses, you actually have to move your eyes into a certain position.
Yes.
So if you want to have work on a computer or read, you actually have to move your eyes down into that corridor or space where you will focus in on a close object. With a multifocal IOL, there is a constant multiple focus point projected at the back of the eye, and the brain actually chooses which focus point it wants to use. So that is so you don't have to look at a specific area. The brain actually adapts automatically with a process that we call neuro adaptation. And so then you can see far, you can see intermediate, you can see near. But again, also you get different types of multifocals, and the latest or recent developments has been the trifocals, where you actually have the three focal points. And previously there was you have the bifocals, where you actually have far vision and you have near vision, but the intermediate part, the 60 centimeter part, was not there. And which did cause problems, especially in our digital era, where everybody is working on their laptops or on their tablets. But as I've said, these days it works excellently, the trifocal intraocular lenses.
I was reading something about something called the mini monovision, where you can have one eye which you can have the lens so that you can see far, and the other eye where you can have the lens where you can see near. I mean, that would totally mess up my head. I mean, I wouldn't know which eye to be looking out of to do what. I mean, yes. That's amazing.
That is not for everybody. Normally, your ophthalmologist will first do a trial where they will give you a contact lens to make the one eye a little bit nearsighted, which is your non-dominant eye, because some people can just not adapt to it. It causes... the image size is going to be different, and there is a little bit of loss of depth perception if you go the mini monovision route, but definitely an option, and definitely one of the ways where we try to reduce spectacle dependency.
But basically what we're saying here is there are all these options now, but not every one of them is for everybody. So when you are needing to have cataract surgery and you are a candidate for having these IOLs, you need to discuss this fully with your ophthalmologist before you go into surgery. Obviously, I mean, he would do that with you or she would do that with you, but it's something you need to talk about, to discuss between you. First of all, what you do, what your hobbies are, what your job is, do you drive at night, all that sort of thing. That all plays into which of these IOLs would be best for you.
Yes. Remember, there's always a compromise, no matter which IOL you go for, or which you choose. And your ophthalmologist is the best person to actually discuss this with, and he will help you then and guide you on the best choice that is suited for your lifestyle and for your eye. And there are certain conditions which will exempt you from actually having an cataract operation with a multifocal intraocular lens implanted into your eye. And remember, an eye must be completely perfect if you want to have a multifocal intraocular lens. There must be no other pathology, because light is divided when you use a multifocal IOL. But for those people with the correct motivation and with the perfect alignment of the eye or perfect anatomy of the eye, with no other diseases or ocular problems, a multifocal IOL can really make a big difference in where you can be spectacle independent and have a very active lifestyle without any glasses.
But if you don't have the perfect eye, there is still the monofocal one. So you're not completely left out of the picture here.
No, definitely. For everyone, there's cataract surgery really makes a big difference. And whether you go for the multifocal, the monofocal, or the toric IOL, all these big names, but it really makes a vast difference. And it will give you back to a vision that you had before you developed the cataract, after you've had your cataract surgery. And sometimes you might need glasses for far and for near. Sometimes you might only need glasses for near. And in the case of a multifocal IOL, you will not need glasses at all.
The point being that with the cataracts, even if you had worn the glasses, you would still have the cloudy vision. So, if you have had the cataract surgery and now you have to wear the glasses, at least you're going to be able to see through them.
Yes.
Which you wouldn't have done before.
Yes, of course. So, remember, a cataract is where you actually lose vision and you have poor eyesight that spectacles cannot correct. And the problem lies within the lens of the eye.
So lots of interesting things. I've got some information. If people are wanting all of that, I will send that to them. But Lawrence, thank you very much indeed for your time on the show this evening.
No, thank you very much. And thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
Good night.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Ophthalmologist Dr. Lawrence Kutsia is a founding member of Envision Center for Sight. There is a website, www.alcon.com. That's ALCON. I also have lots of information about all we need to know about lens implants. So if you'd like that, just drop me a mail to healthmatters@safm.co.za. And that's it for Health Matters for this week. I'm Karen Key. Thanks for joining me tonight. And I'll be back with you again tomorrow evening just after 9 with Time to Travel. So join me then. As I mentioned, if you'd like more information on something you've heard tonight, email me at healthmatters@safm.co.za. It's time now for Stephen Kirker and some nighttime music. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Karen. Such fantastic progress being made. Yes, I can see myself wanting to do that with the surgery because I'm hopeless when it comes to spectacles. And yes, I think my lenses are beginning to do that thing. It's something we do in our family. Look into the light and suddenly there's not much left to see. More great medical news and information next week between 9 and 10. No, I lie. It's a disability report next week, Tuesday between 9 and 10. But to join Karen again tomorrow for Time to Travel. Into SFM's Nighttime Music we go. Let's chill things out after the news.